Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. The show is also sponsored by reclaimingtherepublic.org. And as I say, you can go to both MobiusStripPress.com and reclaimingtherepublic.org and get a very clear picture as to what Republic Review is and the solutions that are the primary solution of what it takes to save our Constitution. As I usually say, and I might as well start the show off with the fact that this is, you are listening to the only show on air anywhere that asserts the constitutional solution to the federal government overreach. The solution that we provide, Reclaiming the Republic, or I should say more specifically, the Audit and Republic Review, are the mechanisms of getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution, period. The content on this show will also refer to content on previous shows, so you really need to download the podcast so that you can make sense and kind of dovetail and mesh together this this argument that we're weaving here. And bear in mind, the content on this show is also non-perishable because the context of the Constitution, whether it relates to news or whether it relates to the solution and or just open dialogue, the fact is that this this content and this topic surpasses time and will actually be relevant 10 years from now as well as 100 years from now. So that being said, you're more than free to call in. The lines are open. And let me also point out the importance of my presentation out on reclaimingtherepublic.org. If you go to my YouTube that is presenting the academic argument for Republic Review, just watch the first 30 minutes of this. As I say, make a party out of it. Get some chips or not. Get some paper and a pen and just make notes and come up with good challenges to what I'm asserting. Go into the source documents that I'm calling out, and you tell me how I am misreading this. If you have a mailing group of patriots and fellow like-minded people in your neighborhood or what have you, by all means, invite them over and give them the necessary knowledge of what we need to reclaim the Republic, because it's really not about hits, it's not about money, it is only about our liberty and saving the Constitution. Therefore, the message has to stand as a relevant message of what we all have to do, because this isn't a one-man show. This is literally going to require a good body of people. And when I mean a good body of people, I'm looking for 5,445 people, which are the state legislators of this republic, to basically engage in doing their job and shedding all of this federal overreach and tyranny that their poor citizens are having to endure. And so as I look and as I look out my window here right now, I do not see any sign or news, anything in the news, on the media or anything, where the federal government is disbanding any of its tyrannical roles or responsibilities and powers. With that said, it looks like it is up to us, folks. We're going to have to do it. And so, as I say, we need to get a David to stand up. And I believe that David is Wyoming. It could be the Dakotas. It could be Kansas. But we need one of these Davids to stand up and call for the family or the union of Davids to unite on the principles of their Constitution and the violations of it. And as I said, I'm going to have a new question. If you want to vie in, what? So here's the question. What or where in the Constitution gives the federal government the power to create and manage reservations for any race or culture or class? If you know where that is in the Constitution, you call in and let me know. And so let me go back on to what I was talking about yesterday. And as a matter of fact, I had a speech or a presentation that I gave last night. I traveled a couple of counties over and spoke to a central committee and their entire organization, and it was just very well received. And so when it comes down to the Constitution, there are lots of people loving the Constitution. There's lots of people that are recognizing its peril and danger that we're facing. And so there's just no doubt in my mind that there's so much thirst and hunger in seeking a solution. So let them know that they may want to start tuning in or at least downloading the podcast, because I understand the 1 hour during the day does not make somebody's time available. So in our very hectic schedule, I think we're all dying from this disease called the busies, because we're all just way too busy and taking care of other things and just trying to stay alive. So let them know that they can either tune in or where to get the podcast at reclaimingtherepublic.org. Anyway, this California secession that they're trying to move into a initiative, and this is strictly a ploy of democracy. If you understand the dangers of democracy, they're trying to take it to the majority of the voters to basically say, hey, because we're a majority or because we're a democracy, because we've perverted our position as a state and no longer abide by the Constitution, being Republican in form, we are going to have a vote and we're going to go with a majority to secede. Well, there is a real solution for this, and it kind of came out, and I've been actually ruminating and cogitating on this particular topic. And so I honestly believe, in addition to Republic Review moving forward, I honestly believe that most all of these states that don't have a hope in getting their David to stand up, at least not at first, I honestly believe that the solution, or what those states ought to be doing, is pushing for a state constitutional convention. And the way to do this is to get your county commissioners to actually stand up and say, you know what, we recognize that the Constitution is no longer being abided by, and it is not abiding by its key element. In other words, most constitutions, I know they all state that they recognize the Constitution of the United States to be the supreme law of the land. And if that's the case, then Article 4, Section 4, the guarantee clause, would be a key factor in how states are supposed to operate, where there is representation for the constituents, not just the people, but for the counties as well. And the counties have completely lost their voice, not only the counties, but the people within the counties, because the interest of the people in one county differs vastly from the interest of the people in another county. And what they have done in a democracy is boiled everybody down to a general representation and a general interest. And that couldn't be furthest from the truth. To be clear, the framers were very, very concerned about population centers. And as a matter of fact, that was the whole point of the Sherman Compromise. When they came down to why the New Jersey and the Virginia plans, the New Jersey plan and the Virginia plan were just inadequate, I believe it was the delegates from Delaware, the teeny state of Delaware, came up and said, or they were asking, what's the problem? How come you guys won't go along with this? And Delaware was the one that said, us smaller states don't trust you bigger states. Well, what's happened? Do we really trust these bigger states or these bigger population centers that can actually take a majority of control? Because if you understand what ended up happening with the bicameral legislative body, there was equal representation within the Senate, so that even though Congress may try to do some shenanigans in giving the larger states an advantage that would be significantly over the smaller states, the Senate would be able to keep that from happening, because they would be protecting the interest of their states, just like counties are supposed to be doing that. And with that, I'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. is G.R. Mobley. The reason the progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost all billionaires in the world are funding a vast array of different groups, and their efforts are to undermine our Republican Constitution. If you don't believe me, Google the donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, and many other state rights, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved and supporting programs based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. Thank you. This is G.R. Mobley. I've been on the radio for over a year, and for over a decade, I've been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we are going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument, and most do not like it for money reasons. If you have not read my executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can pick up my executive summaries, books, and content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you'll know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content. Most of it's free at reclaimingtherepublic.org and mobistrippress.com as well. This way, you can become a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. This is G.R. Mobley. Did you know your overall health is connected to your dental health? And as you get older, this becomes more and more important. If you're like me, going to the dentist can be terrifying. So for me to maintain my dental health and overall health, I need a great dentist and staff who are sensitive to my fear, pain, and even my fear of the cost of dental work. This is why it took me almost 2 years to find a great dentist after I moved here. Bottom line, I need a great dentist just to get into the chair, even for a regular cleaning. This is why I personally recommend Dr. Vaughn Tracy as not only a great dentist, but a patriot and a dentist that cares about your comfort and health. You can find him at VonTracyDDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. Then you can agree with me, it's great to have a great dentist. Hi, this is G.R. Mobley. If you've listened to my weekly show, Reclaiming the Republic, right here on Red State Talk Radio, every weekday evening from 6 to 7 Eastern and 3 to 4 Pacific, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. It is a hard, fast contract. In accordance to Article 7, the states are the only stakeholders in this contract, and inherent in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight over the contract. This means they can audit the contract against the general government and the unconstitutional powers they are exercising. Any single state can perform this audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what I refer to as Republic Review. Please read my executive summary on reclaimingtherepublic.org to learn the details about Republic Review. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. Okay, so what's this crazy GR talking about? What GR is talking about is actually getting the states and the counties within each state to start calling for a state constitutional convention. There have been plenty of shenanigans in most of these states where the states have either passed laws because they moved into a democracy. And a great case in point is homosexual marriage. Okay, so is homosexual marriage something that is up to a democracy, or should that be a majority rule? And so there are things to start looking at and vetting, and going through a constitutional convention would play out this way. A county would basically start talking to other county commissioners and saying, we need to convene a state convention to literally look at and modify however we deem necessary. Because back in the old days, they actually used to review their state conventions and their constitution every so many years. When's the last time that happened? So this is how it plays out. As a state says, okay, or as a county says, we need to look at our convention or do a convention for our constitution, and they start pulling the other counties together, and it starts collecting momentum. The few counties that happen to have the large population are going to demand their disparate, what do you want to call that, representation. In other words, well, we have so many more people, we want to be able to have a greater representation. This is where you go to Congress and say, hey, look, we have a right to, you know, review our constitution in our state, and our constitution is based on a Republican form of government, not necessarily representative of the people, but of the counties as well, and that the counties want to review and protect its interests. And so going down this path would bring the light on to Congress and say, look, we're, these states are not abiding by the guarantee clause. And so they need to, you know, protect themselves by going in and raising the bar. And instead of it being a majority rules by population, maybe it should be a majority rules by county to ensure that the county's interests are being tended to instead of being ignored and trampled upon. And so this is American republicanism, because as I have said several times before, Roger Sherman, when he created the compromise, that compromise was recognizing the state sovereignty in the U.S. Constitution, which then in turn was applied to the state constitutions in the state government. And that's why the counties actually took an integral role as the sub-seats. Well, that's why counties have seats of government, and that's why they have separate interests. Because counties are physical bodies of land, and that land needs tending and so forth. Maybe there may be some more tending to a highly populated county, but that doesn't mean that that county loses its representation in its legislative body that was designed for it. And that legislative body was the Senate. And so I believe that the argument would go to Congress, and at this point with a open ear in Congress currently, as long as it is being controlled by Republicans, one would think that the Republicans would then clearly define a Republican form of government before the Democrats get to do this. And so I honestly believe that Trump and Congress should be stepping in, but it doesn't matter. It would play out that, because if you look at how the counties sent delegates and how it had been done historically, counties would send delegates to the state convention, and each county was basically given. It wasn't a vote by delegate. It was a vote by county, just like in the Constitutional Convention, just like in the ratification debates. It is a single binary vote by each individual sovereignty, or each individual, I'll actually use the word constituent, because in many cases, lots of states did not establish sovereign counties, which was a mistake in itself. These counties were just administrative representations, but actually they do have separate responsibilities and roles in providing services. I'll give you a good case in point. Do the counties have to pay for fire, school, and that type of stuff? Because the states have washed their hands of having to do that because they don't want to be bogged down in providing the essential services. They would much rather be providing the unnecessary services like housing for illegals and tending to needle exchange programs, those types of things where it doesn't come out of county expenses. And that's one of the reasons why the state government, and especially these blue states, have been shifting what they're supposed to pay for. Look at exactly what California has done in pulling back its budget and basically leaving the counties out to dry. And so, to me, there's just no doubt that the best thing you can really do to energize a movement in your state is to literally start attacking this in several different directions. Most of these states should also be starting a movement in dividing its state up into multiple states. California, possibly two. I do not like the progressive design of maintaining three progressive counties. The whole point of dividing that state is leaving those who don't agree with the progressive agenda alone. Let LA all the way up to San Francisco be their little bastion of liberalism, and let them destroy themselves by taxing themselves to death, and let everybody move into that little state and ask for their free handouts. And we'll see how far that gets them. And so I believe that the rest of the state in California and most all these other, Illinois is the same way. Illinois should be isolating Chicago and that large population center and saying, you know what, we don't need any of that. We want to create our own state. Michigan, Milwaukee and Wisconsin, Michigan and Detroit. All of these areas could easily be isolated by creating new states. And in doing so, you'll actually be able to protect yourself. And then you'd start getting equal representation, or actually fairer representation in your new state, as well as in the federal government. Because each of these states would get two new senators and be guaranteed at least a minimum of one representative. That's why I'm a huge advocate for lots of states splitting, like the Dakotas, especially Wyoming. Wyoming would then have four conservative senators. The Dakotas would have another four for each. So, I mean, you're just adding six senators in those three states that are conservative, which would literally start shifting those the power base within Congress, within the Senate, and so forth. And actually, you'd start eating away the House representation because they decided not to follow the Constitution and giving every 30,000 constituents or citizens representation, because clearly the Constitution says that apportionment for a representative in Congress should be by 30,000. We should have over 10,000 congressmen in this country. But we don't, because we're not following the Constitution. And if you look at the debates on representation, it was pretty heavy. I'm going to get into the ratification debate some more, because I've told you that these gentlemen actually talked about very specifically what was in the Constitution, what these lines meant, what these lines didn't mean, and the dialogue that they had clearly delineated, defined what these clauses meant and how they were applied and so forth. And we've been ignoring them and allowing people with machinations like Marshall and other lawyers and politicians to tell us what these things mean, when the framers and these delegates within the state ratification debates actually did the job for us. Why aren't we reading these and leaning on the ratification debates to understand what's within the Constitution? So as soon as I get back from my hard break, which I'm literally in the middle of right now, I'm just starting, I will be back and talking about more of the Virginia ratification debates and the insights that the framers gave us. So thank you so much, and I'll be right back. My show, Reclaiming the Republic, is more than an educational show. My intent is also to work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is result-oriented and is live across the Republic. Download and share our podcast. Like, follow, and share our page, Mobius Strip Press, and the articles and content posted on our Facebook page. Get informed about groups in the local area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. This is G.R. Mobley. I'm working with Trevor Lawton, Douglas V. Gibbs, Tom DeWeese, John Hancock, and many other good patriots in setting up rodeos for Republic Review this summer. We're doing this in Wyoming, Utah, South Dakota, Idaho, Kansas, and North Dakota for this election cycle. If you are beginning to understand the power of Republic Review, then we need your help one way or another. More importantly, if you live in these states or know any patriotic leadership, whether that's an elected official, grassroots leader, or political leader, please reach out to me on Facebook or email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know who we can work with in organizing these events. It is our intent to get one and hopefully all of these states to call for Republic Review. If we can get this started, I promise you we will make America great once and for all. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are supporting to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. This is G.R. Mobley. I've been on the radio for over a year, and for over a decade, I've been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we are going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academe has been able to refute my argument, and most do not like it for money reasons. If you have not read my executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can pick up my executive summaries, books, and content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you'll know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content. Most of it's free at reclaimingtherepublic.org and mobistrippress.com as well. This way, you can become a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's, and if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. And so one of my favorite things to say in leading into any of these source documents is, and it's going to be the Virginia ratification debates. And oh, by the way, where do you get the Virginia ratification debates? That's actually a common question that I get. And actually, let me pull it up because I want to get it right for you. And if you actually Google... if you Google the Avalon Project, you will find that the Avalon Project is a page that is ran by Yale University. And so if you go there, you'll actually find all sorts of historical documents strewn across. Let me see. I'll go all the way back to the top. And they go from the 21st century back to medieval times, ancient times, 4000 BC to 399 and so forth. And so, and they call it BCE, of course, because that's the Wiccan version of how we refer to dates, if you didn't know that. or you know, how the witches wanted us to do that. Anywho, moving forward, the interesting part that I'm going to get into, and as I get into this, it's Section 9 of Article 1. I'm going to start off with that. But more importantly, I want you to ponder this. Are the words in our founding documents that these framers are stating, that I am citing, are these the words of deceit? Or are the words that we have been taught from our progressive education system, the progressive colleges and professors, lawyers, politicians, and bureaucrats, are those the words of deceit that have been designed to get us to obfuscate the truth and to get us to believe in their narrative? Because I will tell you that it has not been for good reasons that we've been lied to by these progressives. And so let me start off with this piece by Governor Randolph. And this was, I want to say this was like early June. And Randolph is covering the negative restrictions. And he says, but the insertion of the negative restrictions has given cause of triumph. It seems to gentlemen, they suppose that it demonstrates that Congress are to have powers by implication. I will meet them on that ground. I persuaded myself that many or that every exception here mentioned is an exception, not from general power, but from the particular powers therein vested. To what power in the general government is the exception made respecting the importation of Negroes? Not from a general power, but from a particular power expressly enumerated. This is an exception from the power given them of regulating commerce. So the one thing that they were given very specifically in regulating the importation of commerce was to shut down the slave trade. One of my favorite little stories about this, and I'm going to go on a little tangent, is that during the Constitutional Convention, when it came up from the subcommittee that they were going to delay the stopping of the slave trade until, because they wanted to end slavery. And I don't know if I've gotten into this before, but it came down to the two Carolinas and Georgia were the states that said, we're going to leave if you actually make this about slavery. And so I personally believe that was the biggest mistake they could have made. What they should have done was they should have done the right thing and said, okay, fine, leave. And good luck with Spain and dealing with Britain and France. And, you know, if you think you can withstand that, because they're not too, France is not too keen on slavery. Maybe Spain is, but, you know, Spain, they're going to come in and they're very harsh conquerors. Look to the south of how they treated those people who occupied the space when they come in and actually begin to rule. And there's no doubt in my mind that they would not have wanted Spain to come into Georgia or the Carolinas, that they would have saw that as a true tyrannical government coming in and oppressing them. So there's no way they would have created an alliance with Spain. And so potentially the only other country that they could have created an alliance with would have been Britain. And I just have a hard time thinking that they fought a war and lost that war. And considering that the lack of manufacturing down there, they just would not be able to create the guns and all of those other things. I think that those three southern states would have basically came back with their tail between their legs saying, okay, we can't do this alone. We will end the slave trade and become a part of the Union. I believe that's what would have ended up happening. But anyway, let me go on. So he says, not from a general power, but from a particular power expressly enumerated. This is an exception from the power given them of regulating commerce. He asks, where is the power to which prohibition of suspending the habeas corpus is an exception? I contend that by virtue of the power given to Congress to regulate courts, they could suspend the writ of habeas corpus. This is therefore an exception to that power. And so these are all these exceptions or nugatory powers placed on Congress and the federal government in Article 1, Section 9. He goes on and says, the third restriction is not that a bill of attainder or ex post facto law shall be passed. This is a manifest exception to another power. We know well the attainders and ex post facto laws have always been the engines of criminal jurisprudence. This is therefore an exception to the criminal jurisdiction vested in that body, because down the road they believed that they may have been encroaching, and they wanted to ensure that they couldn't pass laws within themselves or within those things that they had jurisdiction over that would have been ex post facto. And I've covered ex post facto laws a lot, where the government actually passes a law of saying something was legal and now it's illegal. And a great example of that is water restrictions. You bought land, you could have a well on that land, you could do all sorts of things with that land, and then the government comes along and says, you can't do that anymore, that's illegal, and we'll arrest you because you're committing a crime. You can't drill a well, you can't even access that water. That, my friends, is an ex post facto law. Just like in Illinois, when they're trying to pass these banning guns and going to come around confiscating guns, that is an ex post facto law. And so is this applied to the federal government? Yes, but it is also applied to states because of the 14th Amendment. So that's why you need to tune in and listen to all these other podcasts. Anyway, the fourth restriction is that no capitation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census before directed to be taken. Our debates show from what power this is an exception, because they've already been talking. It was the first thing out the gate that the anti-federalists were complaining about was the federal government is now going to be able to directly tax the states. Where before, they would put in a requisition and say, hey, can you support this? Can you support this? And in essence, that was a lame policy that was destined to fail. Anyway, I keep going. The fifth restriction clause are an exception to the power of regulating commerce. The restriction of the sixth clause, that no money should be drawn from the treasury but in consequence of appropriations made by law, is an exception to the power of paying debts of the United States, for the power of drawing money from the treasury is consequential of that paying of public debts. The next restriction is that no titles of nobility shall be granted by the United States. If we cast our eyes to the manner in which titles of nobility first originated, we shall find this restriction founded on the same principles. These sprang from military and civil offices, but are put in the hands of the United States, and therefore I presume it to be an exception to that power. Before I get into a hard break, because I got less than a minute, I want to point out that we have migrated completely away from this, because George Washington and the framers stamped their feet, and they were very emphatic that they did not want their faces on money. They did not want any memorials made to them. They were merely men, and they did not want to be immortalized by the future generations. And so what have we done? We have basically created titles of nobility to those who have passed, and we even have titles of nobility to those who are living, because when we have ex-heads of state, i.e. Clintons and Obama, going out into other countries and basically talking about foreign policy and everything else, that is a clear violation of the Logan Act, which basically sets aside only the federal government and those currently appointed have control over foreign policies and doctrines and so forth. So those guys should be restricted from traveling and opening their yaps. But anyway, I digress. I'm at a hard break. I'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. This is G.R. Mobley. Most of you understand the importance of having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategic goal for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail. And if you don't have a long-term strategy, you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain or restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Tracy at VonTracyDDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are supporting to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. This is G.R. Mobley. The reason the progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost all billionaires in the world are funding a vast array of different groups, and their efforts are to undermine our Republican Constitution. If you don't believe me, Google the donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, and many other state rights, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved and supporting programs based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. Thank you. Hi, this is G.R. Mobley. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states, in accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution. These conventions require states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. These conventions are unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to get my executive summary on Republic Review and listen to Reclaiming the Republic right here on Red State Talk Radio every weekday evening from 6 to 5 Eastern and 3 to 4 Pacific. Thank you. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Well, so what I've been going through so far, and what I've been telling you so far, and I'm going to back up, and why does he keep going through the ratification debates? The Constitution is a contract, pure and simple. The states sent delegates. They created a contract in compliance to the commands, or I should say the guidance provided by the Continental Congress as well as the state legislative bodies to go and fix the Articles of Confederation. So what they did was they created a contract, and per Article 7, the stakeholders of that contract are the states. Per Article 5, the states have the ultimate authority, as I've been saying in my promos and so forth. So bottom line, what happens when in the course of ratifying a contract, you cover the details of what this means and what this means and what this means? What you have are legally binding definitions and explanations as to what the contract means. In other words,
when you face, and I pointed this out yesterday, that there was a case just recently in looking at the guarantee clause that the, I believe it was the Supreme Court, that cited the Federalist Papers. Why is it that they don't cite the ratification debates? Because clearly there is no wiggle room or having to interpret the intent behind what was stated. And as I'm reading what Governor Randolph is stating here, he is being very clear that these restrictions of nobility, these restrictions of commerce and so forth, are very clear and concise, that these are negative powers to ensure that these things don't come out of those few enumerated powers that the Congress or the federal government has jurisdiction over. And so the last restriction, this is him again, and I'm back to what Governor Randolph is saying. The last restriction restrains any person in office from accepting of any present or emolument, title, or office from any foreign prince or state. And so it must have been observed before that though the Confederation had restricted Congress from exercising any powers not given them, yet they inserted it not from any apprehension of usurpation, but for greater security. This restriction is provided to prevent corruption. And so actually, this should be amended, because back in those days, corporations did not wield nearly the same kind of power. And so instead of it saying accepting any present or emolument, title, or office from any foreign prince or state or corporation and or lobbyist. So I think that they need to close the door, and they can easily do it right here, to close the door on former senators and so forth to being able to go out. And I think Trump tried to do that and has done that with an executive order, basically barring anybody for 5 years of being able to go out and become a lobbyist or what have you. This restriction is provided to prevent corruption. All men have a natural inherent right of receiving emoluments from anyone unless they be restrained by the regulations of the community. An accident which actually happened operated in producing the restriction. A box was presented to our ambassador by the king of our allies. It was thought proper, in order to exclude corruption and foreign influence, to prohibit anyone in office from receiving or holding any emoluments from foreign states. I believe that if at that moment, when we were in harmony with the King of France, we had supposed that he was corrupting our ambassador, it might have disturbed that confidence and diminished that mutual friendship which contributed to carry us through. I think that, you know, he was elaborating on a very historical case, but the point is that they actually tied these things together. One of the things that I still have a little bit more time to go through, and I wanted to get into some of Madison's comments as well. And this is, I believe, where he's talking about militias or Congress. I think militia was just before this. So anyway, let me get into where he's, okay, the interest of constituent states. And this is Madison, quote, "I appeal to our past experience whether they will attend to the interest of their constituent states. Have not those gentlemen who have honored with seats in Congress often signalized themselves by the attachment to their seats? I wish this government may answer the expectation of its friends and foil the apprehension of its enemies. I hope the patriotism of people will continue and be a sufficient guard to its liberties." Really bold right here. "I believe its tendencies will be that the state governments will counteract the general interest and ultimately prevail." And he's talking about contrasts or encroachments from the federal government. "The number of the representatives is yet sufficient for our safety and will gradually increase if we consider their different sources of information, and number will not appear too small. By the new system, a majority of states cannot introduce amendments, nor are the, and majority means 26 or more, it really requires two-thirds, nor are all of the states required for the purpose. In the old Article of Convention, it took 100% of the states. Now it's only three-fourths. And he goes, three-fourths of them must concur in alterations. In this, there is a departure from the federal idea. The members of the National House of Representatives are to be chosen by the people at large in proportion to the numbers in the respective districts. When we come to the Senate, its members are elected by the states in their equal and political capacity. But had the government been completely consolidated, the Senate would have been chosen by the people in their individual capacity in the same manner as the members of other house or of the other house. Thus, it is a complicated nature, and this complication, I trust, will be found to exclude the evils of absolute consolidation as well as a mere confederacy. And so here's the interesting thing. He's actually going through why you want to ensure that you have two separate ways of getting your representation from the people of the states and the states protecting the people. And therefore having the Senate selected by the states, and I'll just read it again. But had the government been consolidated, the Senate would have been chosen by the people in their individual capacity. So what we have today, folks, because the people are selecting, or actually corporations are pouring money into candidates and their campaigns and getting them elected by barraging you with all sorts of campaigns and all sorts of fundraisers, or not fundraisers, but, you know, rallies and those types of things, and they're literally buying your vote. And so that's how we have lost, and it has been consolidated supposedly as the representatives of the people because it's the people that elect them. But clearly you can tell that the Senate is far more concerned with their constituents, globalists, and corporations, because that's why they're constantly making laws and in rule. Like Sarbanes-Oxley was more of an act to protect large businesses and corporations from the competition of small businesses, because what was put into place were barriers to entrance, because all of a sudden the fees and regulations that small businesses had to overcome were huge hurdles. And so all of these types of things that the Senate has been doing has been in favor of corporations and the globalist agenda, and it has been at the demise of the states and the republic. Have we gotten our money's worth? No, but the corporation and the worlds are getting their money's worth out of our government. But I go on. If Virginia was separated from all the states, her power and authority, so in other words, when California separates from all of the states, its power and authority would extend to all cases in like manner. Where all powers vested in the general government, it would be consolidated. It would be a consolidated government, but the powers of the federal government are enumerated. It can only operate in certain cases. It has legislative powers on defined, and I'm going to emphasize this again, it has legislative powers on defined and limited objects beyond which it cannot extend its jurisdiction. Do I need anything more to prove to you that the federal government can't just reach out and say, we're going to create a Department of Transportation, we're going to create a Department of Interior, we're going to create a Department of Energy, we're going to create a Department of Health and Human Services, Housing and Urban Development, Homeland Security, all of these types of things, if they're not enumerated inside the Constitution? And I'll just repeat it again, the powers of the federal government are enumerated. It can only operate in certain cases. It has legislative powers on defined and limited objects beyond which it cannot extend its jurisdiction. And oh, by the way, this also applies to the Supreme Court. Jurisdiction is strictly limited to what Congress is also limited. In other words, the Supreme Court has no power to be able to go beyond the boundaries of those enumerated powers
regardless of whether they want to and whether they really feel compelled to. It is unconstitutional for them to do this. And what they are doing is violating the supreme law of the land. And that's why it's important, my friends, to understand the Constitution and what we need to do to reclaim our republic. I am G.R. Mobley. I am reclaiming the republic with your help, and I hope you'll be back with me tomorrow. Thank you so much, and have a great day. What's left of it.